Hey, if you're all ready to get started, I guess I have to be. So it is 1 o'clock, a little after, and we'll get going. Welcome, everyone, this afternoon to Relational Health and Family Business. One of the things that was interesting and what have we been learning so much is there has been connections and links to family. Sam mentioned it last evening, connection to his family, and I appreciate so much the Yutzis talk this morning speaking to us, and they also talked about family and doing so many things together. And this is what, you know, what it's about, a family. And so one of the things that I struggled with during this, and I told Sam a while ago, is that I always had to think family. It's so easy to go to business. It's business. That's what many of our family conversations were growing up in many years, over the years, we're talking about business. But our wives did have a way of telling us at certain meetings, family, our business isn't to be talked about. So we learned how to connect as family and do those kind of things. So it was great. One of the things that I appreciate about Boost is the coming together of business folks and gathering in this way, and it's the connections that can be made. And that's just a very powerful and good thing. And I appreciate so much, we went to Boost in Shipshawana a few years ago, and so there was a talk there that was done, and one here this morning, that I will never forget. And that one was Freeman Mullett talked about mental illness. And I don't know if any of you all remember that, that have been there, but that was a powerful experience of hearing his story and hearing the one of redemption this morning. Very powerful lessons for all of us in the Christian faith and Christian walk. When Brian first asked me to do this, I thought, well, what do we have to share? I mean, business is business. Everybody's doing business and you just go do it, right? What is there? And so I will have to say that there were people that asked, well, how do seven brothers get along together in business? And I don't know that I really had a really good answer for them other than to say, well, the simple answer is kind of like a marriage. You make it work. You two people get together and you make it work. So how do you go about those kind of things and making it work? And so, and then I thought, well, they're one of the groups talking about physical health, and if you had this book that could just tell you, you do this, you eat these kind of foods, you exercise like this. And I thought, well, it'd be kind of nice to have all this written down, right, in a book. Well, then I realized we do have a book, and we will be referencing that book numerous times here this afternoon in this talk, and that's the Bible and the life of Jesus and representing and the life that he led here. There were so many things that we can pattern after. One of the other things, I think Bruce mentioned something about, Burl did this morning, studying for, preparing for this, that God, put a lot of things up in his brain and then he's hoping to take it back down to his heart. And I just, one of the things that was really powerful for me was the recognition of all the examples that Christ used and in the Bible that are parallel, the spiritual and the physical. It's just full of them. Marriage is one of them. Christ, we the bride and Christ the groom. Another one is the body, the value of all the pieces that make it work. And in our spiritual families, church families, any setting, the value of the relationships of each other, and that no one part is greater than the rest. It's the whole that is the strength and to it. And that is one of the kind of the roots of what I think our family business, as I look back, that recognize the pieces and the many parts of that that made it successful to the extent that it was. One of the couple things before I get into this, to keep generations clear in our family, we talk about G1s, G2, G3, and I'm a G2. And so I will reference that quite a bit here, just the G3, G4s, you know who I'm talking about. So I have a question for everyone here. How many G1s are in the room this afternoon? You're the first generation in your business. And G2s, okay? G3s? Any G3s? We have one young one, all right. And any more than three? Okay, four or five? Four, okay. As you can see, there's a lot in the generation one and less than two and as it goes through there. So I had ideas and we talked about that years ago in business and why that all happened. So I'm gonna speak to that briefly, at least from my perspective, after being in business for and family business for many years. Just a little bit about myself, and if many of you know, we were in the Steiner Corporation years ago. We sold that, and then we're in Ventrac, and that was sold 3 years ago last week. And there's a third company now started called Tilmore, and that's the next generation. So I'll talk about that a little bit because the business is part of the whole family thing, so there's going to be one little block about that. So to get started, we'll see if this thing works. Okay, this is my family. We're proud parents to four children, three in-laws, and nine grandchildren, and one more on the way this summer. And I appreciate what the Yutzis talk so much about, the value of family and being grandparents, and that's just powerful. There was a time in our life for Karen and I that our kids and grandkids all lived seven or more hours away from us. And then over a short period of several years, they all moved back, and now they all live within three and a half miles of our home. So we are tremendously blessed, and it is a blessing. So that's a ministry in itself in family. Going a little bit farther, this is my family back in 1970. Our parents, Marvin and Mary Steiner, and the names there. And then over a period of many years, we grew up. And this was in 2021. We often stand by birth order, left to right. So this is the order that we are. And then the ladies behind the men, those that help make it all work. And so that's the family of us brothers that we're in business with the last several businesses. So into what it was briefly mentioned, but one of the things as I was thinking about what to talk about, it comes down to the structure of the family, the building, and what is behind that. And it's the foundation, the strength of the foundation. And we know the cornerstone of any strong building is Jesus Christ in the spiritual, and a good strong foundation to start the corner and where you go from there. That it's valuable, and when you get the foundation built correctly, it's much better to have the structure and everything built on top. So Jesus, the cornerstone for all relations. And thinking about this, I thought, well, you know, marriage is family, churches, communities, business. It's all about relationship. And is there any different between all of them, any one of them? And of course, when you get down to spouse and or get into family, it's a lot closer and there's a lot more contact. And in family business, having some of this working and figuring out is you know, very helpful to the success of the entity, in this case, a business for us. I have some scriptures. I'm not going to read them all, but this one I will read, and it's a little short paraphrase. But we are all fellow citizens with the members of the household of God, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets and the faith leaders before us. My words added in. Jesus himself being the cornerstone, in whom the whole structure being joined together grows in a holy temple in the Lord. In him you also are being built together into a dwelling place for God by the Spirit. And it's that strong foundation that I want to share about what our parents built for us, and it was the key to the success of us working together as family. And then with that, the structure that can be built on top. And not only that, but it's the structures of those that come after us, the next generations being built in that foundation. So I had these two verses, and I didn't know where to put them in, so I just put them here. And I appeal to you, brothers, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that all of you agree and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be united in the same mind and the same judgment. Romans 12:18, do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. Well, we worked to agree. Did it all happen? You know, yes. Was there disagreements? Yes, quite a bit. And this last verse, I can just hear my mother talking about relation to and living in peace with each other, because sometimes it wasn't real peaceful. And we had the honor in our early business of the Steiner Corporation that our parents lived in a house out front, and we often had lunch once or twice a week around the dining room table at my parents' home. So that was a wonderful experience, because one of the things in one of the downfalls in business is the lack of communication, or putting communication in place and making it happen. So we were forced to do this every week or twice a week, and we did kind of joke around that Mom was the referee. So you know, for you, for all of you think that we just had it together, well, we worked at it together, but like any business, we had, any family business, we had our own ideas, the way things should be done and so forth, but in, we did work together and attempted to become the, am I losing something? Brian, I've got you here, so I don't know if I hit the wrong button on the bottom or what, but so that's moving into the this is my yeah, this would be the next slide. My parents, Marvin and Mary Steiner, early picture from their early married days, and then one that was taken in 92. And I attribute, and I know us brothers do, much of the success of our relation working together was the foundation that was laid for us by our parents. And we grew up in the Whistler Mennonite Church. If any of you know what the Whistler group is, there was one in our area just down the road 2 miles that we attended, at least our early formative years until I was 13. And they did not have, it was worship Sunday morning for 2 hours or more, and that was it. And our parents had a strong desire to know more of Scripture. And it was through, in the 50s, I remember Mom telling me through a series of 10 evangelistic meetings that came through, and they just had this desire embedded in them to learn more about the Scripture and what God is teaching and telling. And so they started a Bible study, and then in their 63, 4, somewhere in there, the Good News Bible came out. And I remember Mom just saying that that was such a blessing because it put the Bible in the words they could understand. And not having a lot of education, this was something that they could latch on to and learn and study the Scriptures and apply that to their lives. And that was what the desire was for them. So foundation stones that were laid for our family by our parents. Jesus, obviously, the cornerstone of building a strong foundation, as we mentioned. Biblical training and teaching was very important. And I use this verse here, not that it was one my parents necessarily, I don't recall that it was that singled out as an important one, but it's one that has become important for me, and trusting the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on our own understanding, and that is so easy to do. And in all your ways, acknowledge Him, and all the successes, the difficulties, and all things, acknowledge Him, and God will make your paths straight. Another one was service and hospitality was modeled. Our parents modeled this extensively. So in the early 60s, if you were around, remember that. It's an era when MDS was started. It started in Kansas and branched out into other parts of the country. Also when the MCC relief sales were started and the meat canner started coming around, our parents got heavily involved in all three of those, and Dad got involved with leading some of those things. And the desire to use the gifts they had. I know our parents at one point wished, you know, they didn't go into a mission field or do something when they were younger, and so they were doing it, raising their family and doing this. And so the other things that our parents did was did service service and hospitality was modeled. When I'm part of the younger half, and so when I was younger, our parents traveled to Canada, Northwest Territories of Ontario, and worked with Northern Youth Programs, different programs where we did ministry to Native folks. We did work stuff. We did work projects, and that was our vacations. We often kind of joked about that. Our vacations growing up were work projects, going to places. But the lessons we learned were invaluable and have stuck with us for years in our lives, and in fact, do some of those kind of same things with our children. Our parents went to Haiti, Guatemala, Bolivia, and Mexico, and on their own dime, just whatever they felt, they were able to do that because of their work situation. And we grew up on a farm close to Dalton, and the boys did the farm work. Dad worked in the shop, and then in some later years, he worked away in town for the winter, and then came home in the summer and did his custom farm work, is what we grew up with. And this allowed him to go to places through the summer and do that kind of stuff. They taught us how to work. We heard the phrase, do something. And I think a lot of times in reflecting back on this, it was our mother's frustration with us being in the house after school when we got home. It just to get us out of there, do something, go out, do something, find something to do, go do the chores, do whatever. And I think that is a very good lesson. And I recall in one time when we were working in an MDS where we were cleaning up after a flood. And you know, when a bunch of people come together, sometimes it takes a little bit to get organized into doing stuff. And I remember very distinctly, I was maybe 14 and we were doing, that's what it would have been. And we were waiting around what to do. And I just remember, well, it's just start. And I think we had that in the lesson last night. Just start here and start hauling the trash to the road and piling it up so the machines come later can pick it up. And we worked hard all day long just doing things like that, just doing something, being available, and then doing productive work to help in the process of the team of folks working together. Wisdom and knowledge. The comment that came to my mind was, use your head. Us brothers talk about this. We heard it a lot from our father. And it has a negative and also a positive side. So obviously we picked the negative real quick. Well, you weren't using your head. That's why you messed up or didn't do what needed to be done. And I must say that, yeah, that was, it was kind of a reprimand growing up at times. The positive side of that is that we are to use what we've been blessed with to think and work at processes, look at the bigger picture and think about what's there and what the need is and how you can participate and share together in whatever it is. And I believe that in reflecting back of this, that God has given me much some of that gift of in emergency situations or looking at a big picture of something. At Venture Products, what I did the last 6, 7, 8 years of the business there was kind of be up a mile up and take a picture, visualize what's going on and watching the movement of things and how, what's needed in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years if we keep this growth projection as it related to facilities and machinery and equipment. And my nephew often did the employee part. What do we need? And so we were collaborating quite a bit. As buying robotic things that would help with some of the labor needs and those kind of things. So, to use your head is a good, wise, instructional thing for us. Empowerment and opportunity. I didn't mention this earlier, but two of my brothers are back here with me. My oldest brother, Glenn, and then my next older brother, Steve. And I come, one reason this memory is so, the opportunity or the empowerment our father did for us is, so like I said, we were the younger three, and so we got into vocational agriculture in high school and freshman and when we could, and he being a year older than me was a sophomore, but two things stand out in my mind, and one is that our father, we gave assigned a check over. And then we could go to the local livestock auction and buy cattle for the farm at the age of 14, 15 years old. And that was quite an experience for us. We learned, and you had to learn, and you really quickly learned what you were looking for. And then we got into judging cattle and doing different things. So they allowed and empowered us to do that. The other one was, and I think my next older brother and I have the most desire for enjoyment of livestock and the growing up years in the farm. But we needed a building for raising some hogs. And so I remember laying it out, designing this thing. We laid it out and Dad helped us. Not sure how the footer got dug. We poured the concrete. And then we had an experienced person come in and lay the cornerstone. They laid up the corner blocks. And then we as 15 year olds and my youngest brother, who would have been 12, we laid the blocks for this building. And they were pretty straight, and it worked well. And then our father also helped us with cutting out the timbers for their trusses and putting that all together. So at a very young age, we were learning these construction skills. And that just empowering that and then giving us the opportunity to use these skills was very, very, very powerful for me and for us as we then take these things into business and use them for business. Opportunity for education. As I shared, our parents did not have did not go through high school. I think Dad through 8th grade and Mom or 10th grade. But somewhere along in there, Mom was really the driver for education, and she wanted, and working with Dad, they decided to have Christian education. So my oldest brother, Glenn, turned 16. He went down to Eastern Mennonite High School in Harrisonburg for his junior year of high school. And so this one reason why us younger brothers don't remember the older ones being at home, because they left at 16 and went to Eastern Mennonite High School. Two of us went 1 year, and the other five all went two. So we all graduated from EMHS. And that was a good experience for me, and it also broadened our horizons and got us out to see the bigger part of the world than just at home. And that's one of the reasons it was also to do that. And there, and in the Whistler Church, obviously, there was a lot of legalism and a desire for us to see outside that little box, that little shell, and get out and see that there's a bigger world out there. There's a larger kingdom that God is working in to allow us to get into that. A strong support of missions. Our parents, as I mentioned, they traveled a lot, but not just that, but do financial giving and sharing as they could. Growing up on the farm, of course, and many, you know, a lot of us children around, the resources were, I don't know, we always had plenty. We had enough. And so out of extra, they would help people. And at the back then, the church didn't have a lot of emphasis on doing mission work and reaching out, but there was some young people that did, and I know our parents supported them financially. In fact, we know of one time where they went to the bank and took a small loan to put in the offering that Sunday to support a person in business. So those are the experiences that we had to help us understand the value of supporting kingdom work. Giving, this was a phrase that I heard my mother say one time: if you wait to give to a need or an organization until you agree with everything about it, you won't ever give anything. And that was so important, because someone had just said, well, I'm not going to give money to that mission because they have done this and this, and I don't agree with that. And the statement, that's a very valuable lesson for me. And as you look at things in the community, it allows you to get involved with things and help. If the intent is good and it's going the way, you know, and the intent is to follow Christ and to be a witness for him wherever they are, because those of you who have been on the mission field and know places know that it's not like home, and that things are done differently. But is it done for Jesus and done in as he's called you to, then you can give to organizations and support them as God leads you. Picture of our father working with MDS back in Mann, West Virginia. I also went there, but it was a few months later. I do want to bring up a story here. Back in the late 60s, MDS was doing some work in inner city rebuilding, and they had a need in St. Louis that my father went with a group of men to work at construction in inner city of St. Louis. And in this particular day, they were supposed to go pour concrete in the basement of this apartment area or this housing area. And so they went in the morning, prepared for that. The truck was supposed to arrive with the tools, and then the concrete truck was bringing ready-mix concrete. And so they got ready. The truck didn't show up with the tools, but the concrete truck did. And so the question is, what do we do? So they put him off as long as they could, and finally the driver said, I need to unload this now. So they put the chute in the basement and unloaded the concrete. And meanwhile, Dad was praying feverishly about what he's supposed to do, because, you know, concrete doesn't give you a lot of time. So they got some boards and plywood, and they were trying to move concrete. And a man comes down the stairs and said, do you all need help? And Dad, we sure do. He said, come with me. So they went out to the street. They had wheelbars, he had shovels, rakes, trowels, everything to do concrete. And they quickly took everything to the basement. Of course, they didn't have time to, like some jobs you can sit around and talk. They didn't have time for that because the concrete was setting up. They proceeded to do that. And didn't talk much. And then they were getting done. They finished the project, carried the man's tools out to clean him up out there. And Dad had just a couple moments to talk to him and ask him. He asked him, well, why he didn't know he was to come to there. He asked him, well, why he came. And the gentleman didn't really know, and he had never been in that part of the city. And he loaded up and left. And then afterwards, our dad, in thinking about that, said, or thought, you know, that yes, God does have angels. And he felt that an angel visited him that day. And those are the stories that really, really stick to us, especially as a young person working in that environment. And that's a very powerful stone that was laid in the foundation of serving Jesus, and that there are the angels around us supporting us, protecting us, and His Holy Spirit and leading us in our lives and in our work. My youngest brother and his wife were in Bolivia in the early 80s. My parents went down, and of course, working in a shop, that's all handy for Dad, so that's where he ended up. My mother also worked nearby at a children's home, helping with projects there. And in 1985, I had the experience to be in Guatemala with my parents, working. This block machine was taken out of a factory in Michigan, and we had it at our facility, and then it was transported overland to Guatemala, and we got to go down and set it up. And you know, a little miracle took place. I just heard my brother talk about that recently, my Dallas, that we set this thing up not knowing anything about machines like this. And we put the first, we mixed the concrete in the mixer, we poured it, and it went up this ramp and dumped into the top of this machine. And we started it up. And you know what happened? The first two blocks came out on this plate, they were perfect. And they were rusty because the molds were kind of rusty, but they were perfect. And we hit the button again, and it started cycling these blocks through. We laid a whole big area out with the blocks. First time, we didn't have to do any adjustments or anything. It was a miracle. And we just think about that and how that happened. And so they made blocks for years. I don't know what happened to it, but that was then. So here's 1990. Mother and father are back in Bolivia again, and working at Stansberry Children's Home, helping there. And that was what Dad and Mom did. They would just go in to support missionaries and, hey, what do you need us to do? Make something, fix something, do whatever. I do want to change gears just a wee little bit and show you the next slide. And I recognize that there are broken foundations or existing foundations need to be made. And what does one do if their life wasn't built on a strong foundation or had a foundation that was cracked or become unstable? And I don't know, I was going to share some about this, and I just have the comment that what was shared this morning is a powerful message about this subject. And I don't feel worthy to even speak about it in that way, but I will go through this. So seek truth from God's word, and that was shared this morning. A prayer. Our mother was a prayer warrior. Distinctly remember her praying for her family, and I know that she prayed for us and sought, you know, God's wisdom in leading us boys in the right way and for safety, because we were active guys and doing everything. And I know Mom said it's a miracle that we all reached adulthood, and now the second miracle, we all reached at least age 65 or older. Seek wisdom from godly people, from older, wise people, maybe someone with similar experiences, professional Christ-following counselors. Those are valuable things that can be used in seeking and healing, and we heard the best story this morning about that. So take, you know, lessons from that. So now I want to jump in just a little bit our family business story, because it is part of our family. And 100 years ago, our grandparents lived in the Kidron area and were farmers, and it's right after World War I. And if you know the story of how MCC started and the huge need that the Russian Mennonites had from the war, that there's five young men that came to the Kidron area, and one of them was invited to our grandparents' home to live for a year and pay his fare off for travel. And we soon learned that Grandpa learned he didn't want to farm, and my grandfather did some woodworking. He didn't want to do that. But his background experience was working with metal, and he wanted to figure this out, what his need and want was. And Grandfather ordered from Sears and Roebuck a forge, an anvil, and some tools. And my father remembers taking the team to the train station and picking up these tools. This is the anvil that was purchased in our family 100 years ago, and we have it, and it's kind of our story of what is around our family. So I want to just briefly get in the next picture. My brother Dallas had this painting made, and it represents numerous aspects of this 100 years, and so I just want to quickly touch on that. right here is the anvil in the middle, and we started Anvil Legacy. The legacy, I don't know what you want to call it, it's not a business per se, but to hold the story of the Steiner family and working with metal. And so this would impact our uncles and cousins too, which I have a cousin that here sitting here another generation back. But this is what started our family working with metal. And that gentleman then went on his own in an auto body, auto repair business. But years later, then electric came, and our father's grandfather started working in a welding shop in a home farm. And he started by taking junk wheels from from cars and built milk carts. He built wagons and elevators. This is number 12. We have wagon number 17. And so they knew they made quite a few. It wasn't Steiner Corporation or manufacturing, but this is what they did on the farm. Then then my parents' picture again, and I'll point this one out right now. It's a picture that was the painting of our picture taken about 1986. From this, our father started making things, a tractor he made and a forage harvester with wagons. We had three of those wagons. He made that in the early 60s and used that for 10 years in doing custom harvest work. So we grew up doing those things where Dad would go to other farms and fill silos with them. Then in 1974, we started Steiner Corporation, and it was to build a tractor, but we also built snow blowers a few years because we had the big snows here in the late 70s. We got into agricultural feed handling equipment, and we had that business till 1988 when the tractor line was sold to an English firm. The ag line was sold to a group of employees and our mother, because the Steiner Corporation was us seven boys and Dad, the eight of us. We closed that corporation down, and then 8 years later, we got back into the Ventrac is, or Venture Products is the Steiner Ag product line. We changed the name in 1986 as we started dealing with starting to make the Ventrac line. So that's represented here, and also here is the Olympic flame in the background. We had the privilege of having center stage, the main venue for the opening closing ceremonies. That whole area in the middle was cleaned off with Ventrac equipment. The snow was cleared with that. My brother was there and our photographer, and they took some pictures. And so that was kind of a cool thing to have that. And then from there, we had started the Tillmore tractor in about 2017, and then at the sale of the Ventrac line 3 years ago, the Tillmore went on its own in that business. A couple other things. This middle is the emblem there that represents what we did in 2018, where we celebrated 20 years of Ventrac. We wanted to celebrate something and give back. So, my brother Dallas, who did international sales for us, knew the sales representative in the Baltic countries, and which included Ukraine. And he was a believer, and knew of YWAM organization there in Kiev, Ukraine. And YWAM had about 8 acres, and they could really use a Ventrac. So we put a Ventrac through production and followed the camera through all the process of fabrication, welding, painting, assembly. And then at one of our monthly employee meetings, we took the shields and hood off and had all the employees sign it, 300 and some employees signed this equipment, put it together, shipped it to Ukraine, and then our photographer went over and got video unloading it and so forth, and the reception of it there. And so that can be found if you go to YouTube and put in Ventrac Ukraine and play around a little bit, you'll find that story. The neat thing about that is your follow-up to it, they also had a large building that was never finished, so we're able to get some funds around from different people here in Wayne Holmes County area that helped finish this building, not knowing that a couple years later a war was coming. And that place was designed to hold about 300 people or service that many. And then with the war, it's been over thousands. They're feeding people. And it's been a collecting point for the ministry there to take people and refugees to Poland and other countries. So we feel very blessed that 100 years later, we could give back to Ukraine for what we received 100 years earlier. So that's part of that story. One other thing here, a little hard to see, but right in here is a dove that was put on there to represent the Holy Spirit, looking over our family operations and our family history these 100 years. Laying a strong foundation for the next generation. Once a year, we have a family event, even years in Virginia. odd years, we hold Steiner Camp. And that's, Steiner Camp is heavily for the G4 kids and managed by the G3s, and we have that at our farm and the various areas here in Wayne County. A couple pictures with that, 1981, I'm driving a tractor pulling a whole group of G3s. So go 40 years later, Liddell's with the tractor pulling the G4s. So that's passing this on. Together in 2007, and that group has doubled in size today. I think at last count there was 131 and three or four more on the way. I threw this picture in because water is important in our family, and you'll see a lot of generational mix, and that's just the way we do. At Steiner Camp, we're educating on, we had at the farm, we're looking at crops and being accountable for God's creation and what he's created with, and learning and teaching grandkids about that. One of the things we did is talk about soils and waters. There's about five teams. They each had a tarp. They built an ecosystem there. And then on the right picture is a bucket representing rain, looking at soil erosion and what it does to your to our crops. A lot of creativity happens. There's 37 of these cards here with different designs that people took from seeds that they gathered around the farm and worked at creating these things. And in this, so the group is, 30. It changes every year, but and that would have represented anybody from very young up to 17, 18 years old. So 2 years ago, part of Steiner Camp was taking a four-day, three-night canoe trip on the Pescarabas River, I believe, not too far from home. So several G3s braved it, and they took 30-some G4 grandkids. And this is them getting out of the water one evening, and they had a lot of fun. Sitting around talking, part of their wrap-up every night, they did, the six-year-olds with the 18-year-olds. We also do tours, trips. We also have some business classes here. They're learning carpentry, starting a business, food business, investment, another one, different things we do with the next generation to lay these stones and teach them about the family history and story. Here's job shadowing. At Venture Products a few years back, showed them how to do graphic design and all those kind of things. Robot building classes. So there's, when you have 30 kids together in five different groups or more doing these things, it's quite an undertaking, but a lot of fun. And this little group, they were a little too young for the robot class, so they got tours and then did some more things that are age appropriate. Work projects together. We do that when possible wherever it may be. This was at the farm. Here's one at Tillmore, different ages that come together and do these projects. And there's often pizza or ice cream or something at the end. Also served together. Then during COVID, they wanted family groups to come to do canning. So a bunch of us got up at 5:30 in the morning or 5 o'clock. We went down to the meat canner and we helped with the meat canning as a family unit. The older couple's not part of our family there, but the rest all are. Impromptu family gatherings happen, game nights. We had one here just not too long ago. There was about 35 people there. Just game puzzle nights to get together. We like to get together. Events are always intergenerational. The older ones working with the younger ones. Family disc. I bring this up because it was mentioned this morning. I believe somebody did, maybe Sam, I'm not sure. But the disc was something that happened for us brothers back in 1984, and it was a kind of a life changer, real eye-opening for me, and what DISC means and how you can take that and use that in your business, but more importantly, or as importantly, in your family. And so a year later, our wives did it, and it was a real interesting eye-opening experience for my wife and I to understand each other better, but some of the gifts we have and so forth. So back in 2018, we did DISC as a big family. There was 53 of us on there. We missed a couple, but the different colors of the different families, and then we had a whole afternoon session on training about DISC and teaching the next generation this, and it's really interesting to see. We've got a good number in every corner. A great family building situation, and all the spouses are in there too, so that's great for them to be included in the family as we go. And then this one, tell your family stories that are behind its foundational stones. We just got the stone and the seven branches, it's all stones, literally, and the names on them of our family tree. what happens when difficulty comes? And I think I need to keep moving through this, but this is a time, this verse just really meant a lot to me. A friend loves at all time, and a brother is born for a time of adversity. Seeking advice to help make difficult decisions, because someone in your family understands, and they're a good person to go to when you need to make that. In the early 80s, 20% interest rate on our money at the bank. It was a time of financial difficulty, very much so, that us brothers, there was six of us working there at the time, would leave our paychecks in a drawer until there were funds to cover them. And if one of them had to have theirs, because we were brothers with small families, they could take it, the rest would go as long as we could. And I remember on numerous occasions having as many as three in the drawer at a time. Legal difficulties, this was a good time of gathering and drawing together and support from one another. I was going to talk a little bit about this, and time's not allowing too much, but I'll briefly talk about it. We had some of those issues in the 80s, but after the sale, we closed down the corporation. And then in 1994, we all got a subpoena to a legal lawsuit that we were all being sued individually by the company we had sold to. And that was a difficult time in our life that I'm really glad to be in family business where we could support each other. My one brother who probably would have led our defense was very ill at the time. And so I don't know how that happened, but I picked up the defense for our family as far as being their family representative. And so I went through a lot, numerous depositions from Columbus, had to fly to Milwaukee for one, and went through experience that I didn't know where I was going. But it was one that was a real learning experience. You know, there's always two winners in a lawsuit. You know, their attorney and your attorney. And that's kind of the way, that's what I learned. And I'm a very, very strong proponent of not getting into the legal arena. There's some really biblical teaching on that. To really get into that and study that is very powerful. But I would say that, I learned some lessons about that. And one of the things that happened was then we're getting close to a trial, and ourself and our legal representative counsel was called into the judge's chambers to talk about it. He did say that if there was ever a lawsuit that was open for appeal upon appeal, it's this one, and do all we can to settle it out of court. So I took that back to my brothers, and somewhere in this process, the Lord hit me with Matthew 5:25, that come to terms quickly with your accuser or adversary while you're going with him to the court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard, and you put in prison or turn you over to the dogs or turn you over to whatever. And so I shared that with my brothers and got a consensus to do all we could to settle out of court. That is what happened. And we had to put money into a pot for 5 years that they held the purse strings to it to use for defending if they wanted to. And we knew it'd all be gone, and it was, of course. But one of the lessons that I really learned that God is such a powerful God in responding, and the results of what happened have been far more than what we ever lost during that time. Just a real good learning lesson. Real quickly, in supplier problems, I'm going to bring the next picture up. This was in 2018. There's about 90 tractors sitting here and crated ones. You notice there's a red tag in all of them. This isn't the worst part. There's another twice that many elsewhere that all have bad hydraulic pumps in them that all had to come out and get it fixed. The problem was the supplier didn't know what the problem was either. And so it was a very difficult time. But when you're in something like this, when you have others that can step up and take over some of what you're doing so they can concentrate on there. There was a team of people that concentrated on this. They didn't have, everybody else was picking up everything else they had to do so work could carry on. And a solution was found in time before we had to do a massive layoff just weeks before. And this happened. But it was a life-changing experience. And I know a lot of sleep was lost. And I've told people I lost a lot more sleep over this than whether we should sell the company or not. So that's one of those times when having a good family knit that you're supporting each other through those times of adversity and difficulty. Business transitions, I wanted to touch on this real quick with Tillmore. And I'm going quick, so I didn't show you much about it, but how it's structured. There's 25 of the next generation of the 27 that are owners of Tillmore. Three work there full-time, one part-time, two in-laws, and they all get free advice from the G2 members for free. So this is our structure, how to head off potential in business is what we've done. Tillmore LLC is owned by the G3 family members. It's Class B non-voting stock or units, And then there's a Steiner Legacy Trust started. It owns 7 units that are the voting shares of Class A. And this is managed by 5 trustees. 2 are family and 2 are out. The 5th one can be in or out of family. And they only have 1 job. Their job is to elect the board of managers. And from there, it's a mix, too, of inside-outside members, and they have served terms. There's not terms of this, I don't think. And then from there, you have the officers of the company, and then we have legal and financial advisors, anybody financials to the board. And there's one other thing. From here, the 2 outside managers and also Venture Products was set up exactly like this, and it worked well, and so that's why we do it. But to set salaries for the top management of the Ventrac and Tilmore is set up by 2 outside persons, and our financial advisor set the wages, set the salaries for the others. So you don't ever get into this family thing of, well, I'm the oldest, so I'm going to be the president, and who's getting paid what. And then from then down through the company. Then we come in here. Our CEO currently at Tilmore is non-family. President is family, and then we have directors here. These can be family or non-family, and then other departments, and so that's how it's structured. And I do a little bit of consulting and work with, I didn't mention that, but some folks and holding a series of meetings in the wintertime to share about what was valuable to us, and then bring in the speakers that helped us and different people have helped us to share. And this is paramount. It's the structure that's in place. So everybody sees their name on that chart, and they know they have value and where they're at and who their boss is and how it goes from there. Final thoughts on family business. Businesses don't have a great record for making it to the second and third generations and beyond. Often friction and breakups take place in family relationships. And the question, why is that? Well, from my observations and what I've learned, one of the leading factors is the first generation doesn't set it up for success. Oftentimes the handoff is mishandled, resulting in a fumble or at best a broken play, which can decide the outcome of the game. And so there is tremendous advice. And what I would say is for the generation one is passing this on, and even generation two and building it. There's one thing about life, there's change happens all the time. And Bruce talked about that at Provia. Change happens so often. And so if you can build the environment and the culture where they know it's become norm, then there's not near the resistance to it in business. But in the family, developing a culture even in your family to pass it on to the second and third generations. I'm really talking even outside the business part that Sam had talked to about. But are there mission, vision, value statements in place which a family believes in and can be built upon? Is the soil well prepared for future generations to succeed? Develop a good succession plan. Put the structure together to give the best chance for success. This all helps with the relationship of your family and a healthy experience. Reach out to skilled folks that have experience in business transitions. Accountants, transformation coaches, attorneys, wise Christian leaders, persons that maybe been through it before that can help with that. They're out there and can be very helpful. And Bruce Hampshire is one of those. Following generations should only work in the business they really want to be there, not something they feel that they have to or they couldn't find a job elsewhere, because you want them to be working there. Maintain and improve existing relationships when there's a spark of discontentment. Deal with it before it becomes a fire out of control. All business plans need an exit plan. What if somebody wants out? Build that in as you're building the plan. Empower the next generation. Set these things in place and for them to empower them to learn and grow in your business at a young age. The key to our family working together is what our parents taught and modeled for us, a foundation that was laid which reflected Jesus by serving others and sharing his good news with them. They were not concerned about themselves, but experienced pure joy in serving others, even those that wronged them or caused them harm. They were driven by the desire to listen and respond to Jesus in this life, and when it was over to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. Your work is mission. Developing healthy relationships is serving your family, church, community, wherever, is service to Jesus. We are stronger together than separate. Wouldn't have chosen it any other way. Questions? It was fast. I apologize for that. I have I have some printouts of that painting. There's 18 items on there and expands a paragraph about each one. I'll have them up here. You can pick them up and take them with you. have some business cards here. You can shoot me an email, and I'd be glad to share any of that information with you that you wish. What questions anybody have?